This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with World War II paratrooper Walter Fees of Bakersfield, California. One story he shared before the break was how, sleeping under the kitchen table of a German home while surrounded by the enemy, he heard a German voice ask for milk for a baby. It was civilians who'd been hiding in the basement. And did that encounter give you a little perspective, perhaps, on what those people must be going through?
Well, that shakes you up. That day, they had told us about that. Then that same night, this guy comes out there and he says, "Want milk for baby?" We was the best in the world, though. They came up and got all their stuff and everything, and they were all happy with us, letting them come and get all their food and stuff.
And you've known all along that you're fighting for your country, but I bet that helped you understand that there are some more people that you're fighting for.
That's right. We were protecting them, too.
All the Battle of the Bulge veterans that I've spoken with have something to say about the weather and how brutal it was. Did you have to deal with it much?
We had 2.5 to 3 feet of snow all of the time. We was never on the ground. The second night after this deal with the Beretta, they came and said that the tanks were coming in, so a string of tracks 16 miles long, the 7th Armored Division, but they were 300 or 400 yards in between each tank, you know. And we could come around way over the woods over there and come around a big circle and come up and stopped at the edge of town. Then a tank could run through up there fast as it could and stop. Then 5 of us run out and get on it, and away they'd go. So that's how dangerous it was. You couldn't go out there and wait on a tank. I mean, you just run out and got on there, and away he was gone. And they got us out of there, and it took us all night long down through there. We were 9 miles to our lines.
Well, and before those tanks came, when you realize you're surrounded and it goes from day one to day two and all of a sudden it's day 7, 8, 9, yeah, and they're shooting at you every day, were you starting to wonder if you'd ever get out of there?
Well, what happened, Bob Rock got wounded on the second day and they put him on an ambulance. The ambulance goes out and everything, and we got a radio call from Bob Rock. He says, "Don't do anything, you're surrounded." Said they, "We went through the German lines because we didn't have any guns on us or nothing, but they let us go, but you're surrounded." So that's how we knew we were surrounded. We had quite a few wounded, little hits and this and that and there. And I never was. I never got hit. So all of them walking wounded, they just got on the tanks and went out with us.
In all these battles that you endured through this time, what do you think was the closest you came to not being sitting here in this oil field talking to me right now?
The one I'm going to tell you about, when we infiltrated through to get the Screaming Mimes, that was it. I'd fired my mortar. All 6 of my ammo bearers had been wounded. We lost 30% of our company that night. 6 dead. Sergeant Jacqueline and Wren got hit in the back of the head because bullets going every which way. And then there was 4 others besides that. And then we had 30% wounded. And Captain Lachaise and Major Boyle was in the front going to the Screaming Mimes, and they got machine gunned across the chest. But when I got back to the United States from the ship going to the restaurant, they were standing at the top of the plank greeting us, so they made it. But we had a lot of wounded that night, man. A lot of wounded.
And did you actually feel or see something coming close to you, or just saying because of the sheer numbers of other guys that went down?
Well, down there in southern France, I was laying in my hole. Shrapnel came through the air, making all that kind of, when they're just about dead, they just make a hell of a noise, you know. And it hit me right here. It was hot and it hit hard enough to hurt, you know. So I reached in under my coat and belt and everything was fine. And it was just a spent round to hit me right there.
Right under your right armpit.
That's as close as...
Close enough, huh?
Then up there that night we was taking on Screaming Mimes. I put my water canteen on top of my hole like that so I could drink out of it. And the next morning there was a hole through it and no water was gone. It was just frozen. There's just a hole through it. So that's as close as I came.
Well, with what I've heard about the snow and ice during the bulge, I'm surprised the bullet got through that frozen ice. I understand you also got to see and experience the V-1 buzz bomb back there?
During that deal up there in the Battle of the Bulge, we were over towards the age, and I was outside of this house on guard duty, and I hear that putting in the air, and the 4 or 5 of these buzz bombs was going over with a big yellow flashing back of them, and they'd get over the other side of us a little ways and shut off, and then a second later you'd hit an explosion. We've seen lots of those things. And up there in one of these battles, Wilkins got hit in the butt by shrapnel, and they brought him down and was dressing him up and everything, and they said they're going to send him to England. We was all kidding him. "You got a maid, you're going to England," and everything, and we was all laughing and playing with him and everything, and he leaves, and a month later we hear that he got over there in London. And one of them big high-flying ones came through and come down and took the ward out he was in, killed him. just how things worked.
Yeah, and somehow, even though we've heard story after story of how it could have been you and something came to your rescue, you kept surviving. Why do you think that is? Why do you think you've been able to have this life and now have literally about 100 descendants here that never would have existed?
I thank God kept me so I could repopulate the Central California.
And you have. So you had 7 kids, and you have more than 40 grandkids and 40 great-grandkids. You even have some great-greats?
Yeah, there's about, with the in-laws and everything, there's well over 100 of them.
And they were all there to celebrate your 90th birthday. But let me get the end of the war story for you, because you had a special someone you wanted to get back to, and you wrote to her and said, hey, I'm only going to be home for a short time because we have to go invade Japan. And when did you find out that you wouldn't have to do that?
The second night out on the USS Oneida Victory from Le Havre, France, we got over the ship's message board, we got Hiroshima had been bombed. The next night, we got the same message that Nagasaki had been bombed and the war was over. And we were on our way to, we were going to have a month home. And I sent my wife $350 and told her to meet me out there because I had to see my mother. And I go in up the lane and the door pops open and here she comes. So and then she's been there ever since. She's up there in the graveyard up in Kerman, California.
And if those bombs hadn't have dropped, you never would have made it home to see her or have any of those kids or grandkids. And I've talked to a lot of veterans who say the atomic bomb saved their life. Yeah. Because of those estimates that, you know, a million Americans and countless more Japanese would have died. But you're pretty sure about yours, because you would have been jumping behind enemy lines out of a plane again?
Oh, sure. That's what we did. We'd have been 15 miles in off of one of them shores up there, putting up a line to sketch the Japanese as they came back off the ocean. But it never happened, so that was good.
So I imagine you were probably a fan of Harry Truman, huh?
We thought Harry Truman was it. Yeah, that's for sure. So we just went home and went up to Camp Beale, California, and they sent me home and kept sending me an extension. And then in December in 45, I went back and they discharged me and gave me my money, $700-$800. And I went back to Kerman and started living.
I want to get the story of how you ended up in the oil business, because you're still in the oil business at age 90. But after everything you'd been through, and they discharged you, they gave you that combat infantry badge, they even gave you the good conduct medal, so you must have been doing all right. Was it difficult, though, with everything you'd been through, to here be a 21, 22-year-old guy trying to get on with life after all those intense experiences overseas?
One experience, me and my wife was sleeping in bed flat on our backs. She was beside me, and I wake up, and she's shaking me. She said, what the hell are you doing? And I was laying there fighting Germans on a dam, and my arm was coming up and down like this, hitting her. And she woke me up. So that's the way it was. You dreamt. For many months, you dreamt every night. Yeah, it doesn't go away that fast, you know?
I know it's not easy to talk about those things, but I think it's important for the rest of us to understand that this isn't something you left over there. It's something you've had to carry with you.
Yeah, for 2 or 3 years, maybe 3 or 4, maybe. And then I got busy working in the oil fields and raising kids, and you know, it just goes away slow.
What was it about working in the oil fields that you enjoyed so much? Because I imagine if you're still out here at age 90, you must enjoy it.
Well, it's you're always thinking. You're working 5,000 feet below the surface, figuring what's going on down there. And by now, I know what's going on. And just something to keep you thinking, and it's good money, real good money. And so I just stayed in it. I raised all my kids working in oil fields, and I'm still doing it.
How would you describe your expertise? Because I hear, if anyone around here has any questions, they come to you.
I worked 20 years for Oil Well Service Company on rigs. In 1973, I quit and went up there, Oakhurst up there, and built me a nice big place on a mountain up there. And then these guys come to me and wanted me to come over there and help them. So in 74, I came over there and went to help them. Everything looked so good over there, and they treated me so good that I just stayed there. And I'm still with them. That's 38 years ago. And it's the best company in the oil fields. They give bonuses. Every third month, they give bonus. They get one for Christmas, and then they pay you good. So, like here, they furnish me my house.
I've got to ask you the question. If you just turned 90, and you're still doing this, are you ever going to quit?
I'm going to quit when they carry me out the door. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to go on. But I fully, like I told all them kids up there the other day, I'm going to be standing up here 10 years from now, and I want you all to be here healthy and happy. And so they just about tore the roof off that place.
Yeah, celebrating your 90th birthday. Well, I'm sure you have countless more stories that you could tell. I just want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for being real with us and sharing what it was really like as a paratrooper. Is there anything else that you think we need to know about you and all those guys that you served with in World War II?
Well, the same night I was seeing those B-1s come over, there was a bomber coming about 300 or 400 feet off the ground around there in the moonlight with a guy sitting out there in the grass looking down, looking for any kind of a light so they could drop their bombs. And then we were all standing down there in the dark watching him, and the moon was shining. You could see him sitting up there about 300 or 400 feet in the air. Just see him sitting there in the front of that bomber. It was amazing.
That was an American bomber?
Oh, no. It was a German bomber looking for us.
Good thing he didn't see you.
Sure was.
What are you most proud of?
Oh, I'm real proud of being there and where it worked out so successfully for me. And to know, I think about my buddies over there all the time, the guys that I would die for. And they're laying over there. It's been 70 years. They're laying over there in them graves. And it breaks my heart, but that's the reason I wanted to do this, so I could bring some of their names to the top for people to know about them. Oh, we was up there in between a bunch of rocks in Italy, and we were all standing there kind of resting and everything. Ed Lang was a big, tall kid, real muscled up and everything. And he was standing over there in back of that rock, and a bullet comes in, hits one of them rocks over there on the side, ricocheted, and hit Lang right there and came out over here, right, just tore his heart out. So that just goes to show you how things happen. He was in the back of a rock and should have been protected. But the guy was so far off, his bullet hit that rock and ricocheted and just hit poor old Lang right in the side and come right up through his heart and tore it right out. So that's another one that's terrible.
Without a doubt, and I know I felt it, I'm pretty sure all the folks listening at home felt your sincere emotion when you said your motivation for doing this interview was to honor your friends who did not make it home. Well done, sir. That's Walter Fees, 90 years old, of Bakersfield. You can find photos of him then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Out of time this time, but join us again next time when yet another veteran explains in his own words why those four words are as true as ever. Freedom is not free.